Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then in another clash of undefeated teams, Earl Clark and Coach Steven Jackson lead the DMV Trilogy against Montrezl Harrell, Coach Dr. J, and the Chicago Triplets. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays Monday on BET. Presented by iHeart.
There is only one thing better than a hypothetical Talking Tuesday, and it's another hypothetical Talking Tuesday. It is wonderful to be back with Television's 10 TV's Adam King to break down questions that we want answered. We talked about the things that we would like to hear from the players a week ago on a Talking Tuesday on the beat, the Austin and Berm show. He's not Berm.
I am not Berm.
I'm still Austin. So let's shift it over to the coaching staff.
Okay.
Change gears. We know that there's not going to be availability with the coaches this week, but let's just pretend for the sake of entertainment and enjoyment that we got to sit down with anyone on the coaching staff or everyone. What would you want to know?
Should I just do the same questions that I did last week, but just pose them to the coaches?
Sure.
And we just have the same discussion.
That'll be it. And thanks for tuning in to Talking Tuesday.
Speaking of which, I still read the comments. And
oh,
I was there was a nice comment that said, I'm really getting used to this Austin and Adam vibe.
Oh.
So Talking Tuesday.
Straight A's.
There was somebody that liked it. One person. Thanks, Mom.
Either your mom or my dad.
There you go. Question for the coaches. I'm going to start on offense. And I am probably going to go to, well, this is tough. I want to look offensive line, but I also want to look running backs.
Okay.
Because I do think there is a question there for Carlos Lachlan of who is the number two guy? We know James Peoples, and it's going to be a shared load.
We know
he is one of the load sharers.
Yeah.
Who's number two in his eyes? Is it one and then three, like three guys all battling out? Or is it Donaldson that's put himself in a good predicament?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Bo Jackson that's really shown out, which they've been very high on all offseason?
Really have.
But who is the guy in his eyes that when we look out there against Texas, the nice thing about the schedule this year is, and it very much resembles when they played Notre Dame in CJ's second year, there is no time to like, oh, I wonder this, I wonder that. Like, we're going to know. Like,
yeah.
They're not going to, you know, two drives in, we're going to know who the two running backs are that they really, really trust. And maybe, you know, I asked, hey, well, this is, I'm sorry, it's supposed to be hypothetical. I did once ask about how much they want to use Donaldson in the passing game.
Well, if you have actual answers, you can provide them.
Well, I don't appreciate that. Only hypothetical things. I did ask about Donaldson, and is he going to be a predominantly passing back? And the answer was no. They are not treating him like he was a wide receiver at all. So I am curious, you only get to play two guys. If I said that to Lachlan, who's his answer? Now, only get to play two guys.
It's an interesting way to frame it because you're not giving him the option then to say, well,
yeah,
you're not counting on Bo Jackson enough, which is what I think he would like to say.
Yeah.
Because Bo Jackson's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been not enough time spent on how impressive C.J. Donaldson looked in spring, which was very different than what I anticipated and what you could have watched on film at West Virginia, where he was playing closer to 250 pounds. And to me, it was like, well, James Peoples is the primary ball carrier. He's going to be the bell cow for the Buckeyes. And then C.J. Donaldson is going to come in here and just mash people in short yardage. He's going to move the pile into the end zone, and he's going to be a touchdown vulture for the fantasy football fans out there.
There is college fantasy football.
There is.
Yeah.
And I don't play it, but you're obsessed with fantasy football.
So. I am, but not college.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's just something to consider. But
I'm obsessed with college football, though.
I think that there is a world where C.J. Donaldson actually does lead this team in carries this year, and I didn't anticipate that at all in February. And then just about the time, here's another like actual answer on a hypothetical Talking Tuesday, where it was like, feedback from the staff is like, well, you're not talking enough about C.J. Donaldson. And then by the end of spring camp, it was like, hey, you've also now completely forgotten about James Peoples. And that's not true.
Yes.
But
I know what
you mean. It sort of flipped around. Both of them were elevating.
That's interesting because I look at it as, and you just heard my question, like, we know it's Peoples. But like, it is true that really all the talk was Donaldson and Bo Jackson. But we know James Peoples is a very good running back. I feel like experience matters in that role. He's been here, and they want somebody that they can trust, and they clearly trust James Peoples. Another question that I would really like to know goes to the tight ends, and a very similar idea to that. This tight ends room is the best in the country, and I mean, it's the best it's been in a long time. I mean,
it's definitely the best that Ohio State has had in my entire...
Yeah, I was thinking...
What are we now? 15 seasons into covering this team. This is the best overall, the deepest, the most versatile, the most flexible. They can do everything they want. And they have really five guys, without even counting like a couple highly rated recruits that Keenan Bailey was able to bring in for that position group, where they can use Bennett Christian to block. They can, you know, we've seen Jelani Thurman's athleticism. I'm not even talking about at the top with what Max Clair and you know, what you're going to get from Will Kaczmarek in his second year. They can do so many different things. It's a really fun one to look at. And I do think, to your point, I would call it the best in America, certainly in terms of depth.
That's the cornerback room.
But it's BIA, of course. This is Ben, but they're the best in the nation. Doesn't roll off the tongue quite the same way. But we'll workshop it. We'll have Keenan Bailey work on that. But they're not going to get the acclaim, I don't believe, as the best in the country, because and I'm tapping the brakes as I try to every year. I don't think, even with Max Clair coming aboard, that this is suddenly going to be a tight end room that has 100 total receptions and 1,000 yards and 15 touchdowns.
Well, you've taken my question and given me an answer, because I think so often, and I give Ohio State credit, because they never really do this with their offense. Sometimes it has been to a fault, but typically it works really well, that they never force anything to any position, any running back, any wide receiver. But at some point, don't you want to make sure that you're utilizing the talent that you have? And how do you make sure? Like, I have been on the Jelani Thurman train forever since he stepped foot on campus. Yeah. I mean, he's been my sleeper pick since his freshman year. But now, how do you get Jelani Thurman in the game? Because everyone wants to talk about Will Kaczmarek and how he's going to have a breakout year. Well, then you have arguably one of the top three tight ends in the country on your roster.
Yeah.
So there are certain positions where depth is amazing. And tight end, you certainly want that, especially with the blocking and you know what they want to do with those guys. But in the end, you're right. There's not going to be that many catches to go around. There's not going to be that many touchdowns to go around. So how in the world does Keenan Bailey balance this thing? Because in most offenses in the country, Max Clair would play 90% of the tight end snaps.
Yeah.
I mean, he's your guy. I don't think that's how it's going to work this year. And how do you keep everybody happy, but also make sure that you're properly utilizing the talent in your room?
When you also don't have to play Max Clair 90% of the snaps because of the depth, but also, you know, the length of the season. And that we keep coming back to this point over and over. Like, Ohio State has built a roster where it does not have to have its frontline guys play every single snap when they don't want them to. It's a luxury that very few programs in the country have or could even consider. That Ohio State can just say, well, you know what? If you have a 12 personnel situation, yeah, you're going to have Will Clair and
Clair is Mazik?
Mashup, yes.
I like it.
Max Clair and Will Kaczmarek out there together. But that's still only, you know, 25-30% of the time that Ohio State uses that. You know, and if you want to be in a heavier package, and you're going to use Bennett Christian for that, when you say the question is, how do you get Jelani Thurman involved? Jelani Thurman's the one. That would have been a question, you know, for a player a week ago, because I think Keenan Bailey would say it's up to him.
It's up to Jelani.
And some of the stuff... people have now seen it. We've talked about it. I think the perception was Jelani Thurman, when he arrived and he got so much excitement for you, for me, for everybody else, looking at the recruiting profile and the athleticism. He's one of these wide receivers that's sliding down there. He can do some things that would be like an evolutionary version of G. Scott. But the actual like receiving part of playing tight end has seemingly been the biggest challenge for him back to his freshman year.
And I never think of the Penn State game.
Yeah, we've seen that out there. And like, and now it's, you know, Ryan Day's joked about it, Keenan Bailey's joked about it. It's like, oh, he caught that, you know, three catches for one first down. It's like, great. But it's also a reality that consistency has to be tapped into for him if he's going to see the field, because I don't think Will Kaczmarek is going backwards. I don't think Max Clair is going backwards. And Bennett Christian has a really neatly carved out role, in my opinion, to help out Ohio State. So we'll see what that looks like. But all of it is a luxury because they can play Nate Roberts if they want, or, you know, they can dip into that depth that they have.
I think you just gave me my first bold prediction for the Texas game.
Yeah, here we go.
I think that two different Buckeye tight ends are going to catch a touchdown in that game. I just think that is what you can come out doing in the first game before teams know how to adjust. Like, I just, in my mind, I know that Texas knows Ohio State has good tight ends, but I know that they're obsessed with Jeremiah Smith right now. They're like, how do we shut this guy down? So I think, you know, and I, thinking back to that Texas game, it wasn't a touchdown, but G. Scott's play on third down, extending the ball 6-7 yards,
yeah,
changed the entire scope of the national. I mean, they won a national title because he was able to get 6 or 7 yards and make that a fourth and short.
Yeah, there's 20 or 30 plays from that playoff run that, yeah, like,
if it doesn't happen,
it slips away from your mind, and it's like, yeah, that was critical.
But I do think, I think that's going to be an integral part of this offense. But I want to know. I think that's a good problem to have, and I get frustrated with Ohio State sometimes because you have so much talent and so many great players, and you're like, well, this guy. I remember one time I asked Ryan, I said, you know, Chris Olave only had, you know, 4 catches in the last 2 games. And he's like, okay. Like, that's, sorry, Chris. Like, you're still a great receiver, but we got a lot of great people here. And,
yeah.
And that's the mindset that all these guys know they have to have. I would go to Brian Hartline, and I would say, what is the conversation with Jeremiah when he's locked down? When, and we're not talking about, oh boy, this cornerback's really good, he's locked in. We're talking about a defense.
I'd love to see if there's,
yes, one, I don't of those, think that's possible. But we're talking a defense, much like the Texas game, just absolutely just sealing him up. There's only so much you can do when you've got, mm-hmm, 3 different guys, 4 different guys trying to make sure you can't catch the ball. What do you, I would love to know, what is the conversation like in that moment? What do you say to a guy who obviously wants to be involved, mm-hmm, who is obviously out there constantly wanting to make ridiculous plays and help the team, but is, and I think it's going to happen more this year, is going to have to be a decoy at some points,
yeah,
to allow Carnell Tate, Brandon Innes, and Mylon Graham to find their own openings, because I think that's how teams are going to structure.
Yeah, that's going to be not just against Texas, but you watch it throughout the duration of the year. What, especially teams with lesser personnel, are they going to put? Because there is no such thing as a cornerback that's going to win one-on-one matchups, no, against Jeremiah Smith. That has not been created in a lab yet to counteract him. But are those teams, somebody like Purdue, going to put 3 defensive players on him? And then what does that mean? Because then you're just going to get absolutely eaten alive by Brandon Ennis and Carnell Tate, or Max Clair, or Will Kazmarek, or James Peoples, or C.J. Donaldson. Like, it's not a winning strategy. It's, again, another first-world problem. Like, if Ohio State is not able to get Jeremiah Smith the same number of touches, catches, touchdowns as a year ago, the offense could still be more productive overall even without that. Now, to your point and your question for Brian Hartline, it's like, you want your best player, yeah, having the football in his hands. How are you going to do that? I think we've seen some examples of that. I think the, you know, moving him around, putting him in motion the, yeah, way that they did against Oregon on that first touchdown, even the you know, the fake reverse action that they got the touchdown with against Notre Dame. Yeah. Like, you've seen some of that. And I think that's where my mind goes. Is Ohio State, Ryan Day, Brian Hartline, are they at a point where they're going to start doing more of this, moving Jeremiah around the formation? Like, we saw that with Jackson Smith and Jigbo, or we just got a hint of that coming along. We talked about that with, like, his, Marv getting work in the slot. Is slot Marv coming? Is that how you get him freed up from some of this double coverage or triple coverage? You know, what's the limit, and how differently could Ohio State use Jeremiah Smith if that does become his reality, which is nonstop double coverage?
Well, there's your question.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean, you nailed it. You get ready to write it down and ask it.
When will I get to it?
Oh, yes, that's the million. That's the question. All right, other side of the ball.
I just thought you were doing nothing but offense because you wanted to save defense for next week.
Oh, okay, back to offense.
Because you didn't even talk about the quarterbacks.
Well,
the fruit was hanging too low.
Yes, exactly.
That's not the good one?
Well, it's true. I covered tight ends, running backs, wide receivers. I'll go to the offensive line.
Still don't want to talk about quarterbacks.
Not yet.
Got it. I saw Julian Sand last week.
Oh, do you look good throwing on air?
So Berman and I felt like maybe they had told the quarterbacks, don't go out to camp. Because we had not laid eyes on them. Okay. That was the one thing that I missed throughout the month. I was like, I really would sure like to see those guys. Mm-hmm. It's been a while. And then we were out there doing the beat, and Julian Sandel comes by. I'm like, oh, he looked bigger.
Did he look happy or sad?
Didn't get a number. He looked happy.
Okay. Did you think he got the job?
I don't think they've... Oh, we're not okay. To that point.
No. Okay. All
right. I don't think they had that conversation right when we were there.
And that was the day, actually.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, you guys aren't going to believe this.
Yeah. I'm glad seeing nothing for the last 3 months.
I'm glad you're here. Mm-hmm. I just left Coach Day's office, mm-hmm. and I've got...
I'd like to announce this on 10 TV Plus.
But yeah. I didn't ask him for a specific number because I think he's already grown very tired of that in a year and a half. Even though the last time we talked to him before the Rose Bowl, he was like, yeah, well, I actually grew an inch since I got here. It's like, cool. I'd still like to get a little bit taller. Is that
Isn't
possible?
Isn't that crazy that they're just like still growing? I know. Like, that's wild to
I
me. Know.
Anyway, I just want to say that I did finally
he was there.
Put a set of eyes on Julian Sayin this summer. And I would say, again, without facts, just observations, that the strength program has been treating him well.
Well, I think, you know, that's a huge question in its own right. Is Ryan, so often people make a point about the size of quarterbacks and how detrimental it is. Kyler Murray is obviously the one that jumps out because everybody talks about it. Even go back to Troy Smith, there was conversation about how real is that? I mean, how much does that, obviously, and I know this sounds silly, but like obviously the 6'4 guy standing up there can see over the line. And yes, that's an advantage. But how much of a disadvantage is it really? Is it something where it worries Ryan? Is it something where, well, you know, it's only a couple inches? But because there are times when you see Julian and he's an amazing, amazing passer. He's obviously getting really good at reading defenses and he's trying to be more of a leader. Mm-hmm. But that's one thing that like you can't really change. You can't make yourself taller.
Yeah.
So then if you're Ryan, obviously when he brought him in, he knew that. Does that worry him at all?
Yeah. It's a good question. I don't know how he would answer it. I think he would say, because there's a lot of research about, well, like every, I don't know the exact stat. I'm just going to say like one of the top 20 all-time passers in the NFL is like shorter than 6'3". Mm-hmm. Drew Brees. Like, and he, if it was a disadvantage, he was certainly able to overcome that. But it's a different skill set. You have to play the game differently than the quarterbacks who are standing there and looking straight over. And even at 6'4", you're not looking over every 6'6", 6'7", left or right tackle out there. So, you know, some of that skill set is required no matter how tall you are. But what does he have to do differently to manage that, I think, is a fascinating conversation. Is it a situation where Lincoln Kienholz, with his size and his frame and his experience, that gives him a little bit of an edge into August?
Exactly.
I think we could talk about that for hours and hours and hours and for the next 6 weeks going up to training camp, because if we're trying to determine the ceiling for this team, it's going to be about who's playing quarterback and how well they're doing it.
Well, I think that leads to the funny part is, so, you know, we didn't touch on quarterbacks for questions, and now I have 800 that I need you.
Like, good.
I
had to coerce you into it.
I didn't want to touch it because everybody wants to talk about it, but it's for a good reason. You're right. The team's going to go as the quarterback does. And I guess and I don't know that Ryan knows this until you know it, but I would love to know what the eureka moment will be, or what it's, you know what? What has it been in the past?
Mm.
Because that you can fall back. What was the eureka moment between Kyle and Devin?
Sure.
Between, I mean, I guess CJ and Kyle, but that was not really. Between, you know.
Don't know that they ever really had one one. So.
But in a quarterback battle, Will and Devin last year, what was the moment where you said, that's my guy, and why? Is that a moment that you can manufacture? Is that a moment that takes time, but you know is coming? Or is it simply one day in training camp, you see something and say, I'm pushing my chips in on him. Let's go win a national title.
That's a great question.
I would be very, like, with, I think Will's a tough one because I understand it was a quarterback competition, but I think we all knew it was Will's job.
Yeah.
Kyle and Devin, I think we felt like it was Kyle's job, but there was a lot of stuff out there that Devin was competing and doing. Obviously, he hurt his hand, which changed a lot. But so, like, what's going to be the moment? And, like, right now, we think it's probably Julian's job, but it's closer than I would have thought we would be talking about at this point. So what is that moment? Like, what is Ryan waiting for in his mind?
Well, spring practice, those are practices 1 through 15.
That's right. You're right.
So he's waiting for practice number 16.
You're right.
Which is going to be July 31st. You had something that you were thinking about on the offensive line before I steered the conversation, I think.
The offensive line. Is that the ones that are up front?
Yeah, those are there's five bigger guys. They block.
They block?
Yeah. They pass protect. They run block.
I'd like them to tell me how they block. No.
Okay. Talking Tuesdays.
There we go. I want to know when it comes to the O-line, how I can't remember a position group, and I think I might have said this on the last Talking Tuesdays, where anything has switched so much. Where, like, the running backs were dominant, but we had questions on the offensive line. Now the offensive line were very confident, but we have questions about the running back. And so I feel like this is going to sound crazy to say. I feel like because of last year, it really matters that we just get a cohesive offensive line. And so how important is it for these guys to just set this line and go, not tinker? I know they start with Texas, but I'm talking before Texas. I'm talking first week of fall camp. These are my five guys. Here's where they're going to be. Secondary, you know, second string, you're great. And if you have to step up, obviously last year is an example, yeah. Be ready. Mm-hmm. But and how much does that change a line? How much does that... I mean, I just think about last year and how much duct tape was going on with that. And you didn't know who was going to be to your right or left every game because of the injuries. So I think I would ask Coach just straight up, do you feel an urgency to just lock this in so you guys can have one solidified unit? Also to help the starting quarterback.
Sure.
Because whoever's behind you, this is his first time behind the offensive line.
Yeah. No, I think I would approach that from the other perspective, which would be, does last year's experience make you less likely to just want to lock yourself into five? And that might sound crazy because I think as long as I've been covering...
You can't ask about last year. It wasn't here.
Well, I get it.
He'd say, I wasn't here. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, but...
Who do you work for?
Right.
Credentials revoked.
Could be... And probably would be more of a Ryan Day conversation. But Tyler Bowen also talked about this throughout spring about cross training and having guys, you know, that's not just a list of tackles and then just a list of guards, that you need to have like your eight or nine best. And all coaches will say that, and then they never actually really put it into practice or put it into effect in games. And the way that I've always covered college football is with the same mindset that you're describing. It's like, can you find five? Can you develop the chemistry and the cohesion? Don't you need that familiarity? And maybe what you saw last year with Ohio State is that they didn't need to because they had invested all this time in cross training and they have enough talent. Are you going to sit down Luke Montgomery, Austin Saravel, Tegra Shabol and just be like, well, no, I mean, you're not needed here. It's surplus to requirements. Like if you have all those guys that are good enough to do it, and I was skeptical of it going into Tennessee, like you're going to rotate guys at guard. I don't think so.
I think the most hate I've ever gotten in the comment section, I said on our pre-Tennessee video way back when that I thought Ohio State was going to dominate the Tennessee defensive line.
Uh-huh. What happened?
And people thought I was the dumbest person. I mean, some of those comments are like, I don't know who that guy is.
Uh-huh.
He knows nothing about college football.
Did you go find them afterwards?
I did not. I just let it sit.
Okay.
But the game I watched looked like Ohio State kind of dominated defensive line. But it's okay. So I'll take your question and I'll one-up your question.
Okay. All right.
And I think this might even be more interesting.
Okay. This is escalating.
Do you worry about locking it in too much that you block out the idea of other guys? For instance, Carson Hinsman is a major reason why this team won a national title.
100%.
He was not on the field. He was not going to be on the field until he absolutely had to be. So how much, now I'm sure this is every coach with every position, but how much do you sit there and knowing how much cohesion is important in that group?
Mm-hmm.
But how much do you wonder? Well, what if I put that guy up there? Would he dominate? Maybe like, and how does last year? You're right. How does last year allow you to tinker a little bit more?
Yeah, I think they will. And again, all of this comes back to Ohio State taking an approach that is built for 16 games.
It's true. And it's coach talk. I took it as a lot of coach talk last year. Ryan, I apologize because you were right. Like he all year long, he said, like, we're going to need everybody at every position. I'm like, okay, sounds good. And then we got to Notre Dame and I'm like, they need everybody at every position. We're running out of people.
You know, sometimes he might not answer the question directly that you ask, but if he says something, it is 99.9% of the time not BS.
I completely agree.
I remember that distinctly because I was the most skeptical that I had ever been about a coach describing a quarterback battle was Kyle McCord and Devin Brown. It's like, I think Kyle's going to win this. He's got the experience. Everything seems to be pointing in that direction. And then he'd be like, well, Devin pulled ahead for some days and this is going back and forth and I'm going to carry it through. And I was like, come on.
Yeah. No, that's
And it turns out that that was absolutely the truth. So since that point, if he's willing to give you details like that and he's saying it into a microphone,
it matters.
I take him at his word.
No, you're exactly right.
Because he's earned that.
That's why I apologize. Because 99.9, I took at your word. And then that 0.1, I was like, we're going to need everybody. Oh, he's being a nice guy.
Nope, sure.
They need everybody. They do. So you're right. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're first string or string or second string or third string. Like, this is a long season.
Yeah. And a long off season.
I was just going to say. Although it gets shorter the longer you play. Nice thing.
That's true.
You know, I think by this time in 10 years, the off season will end. They'll play the national title on March 3rd.
Yeah.
And the spring game on April 5th.
Yeah.
And then.
And we'll have OTAs right now.
Right. Yes, exactly.
I can't wait for that day, actually.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be.
Just endless content.
That sounds like a dream. Mm-hmm. I don't even have to do more hypothetical talking
Tuesdays.
There'll
be no more hypothetical talking Tuesdays. It'll just be talking Tuesdays.
But guess what? Now I lied because I said there were only going to be two of them. But now there's going to be a third because we just happened to save the defense. And I know you love that I just don't script anything. And
no, that was great. Now I loved it. I mean, I'm glad you cut me off because I have a million defensive questions.
Good. We'll get into that the next time that I'm back with Adam King of 10 TV.
We read the comments.
Not we.
We read the comments. I text Austin every one of them. So just give us your outward thoughts on Austin Ward. Nothing mean about me, but Austin's fine.
Yeah, just love Adam. Keep hating me. That's all fine and good. Those of you that don't hate me, hey, I love you too.
He really appreciates
it. Yeah. Great to talk with Adam. We're getting closer. June has flown by. And then by this time next month,
we're going to be
in Las Vegas for Big Ten Media Day, where we'll get to actually ask questions to the people that we're talking about, which is going to be awesome.
That's also on a Tuesday.
Oh, it's almost like we scripted it.
Oh, my gosh.
Couldn't have done it any better. Thanks for joining us on The Beat. You can get us on 10TV, 10TV Plus, YouTube, 97.1 The Fans YouTube, Apple, Spotify, I don't know, anywhere else that you get podcasts. And however you listened or watched this one, we sincerely appreciate it. For Adam, I'm Austin. We'll talk to you next time.
Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then in another clash of undefeated teams, Earl Clark and Coach Steven Jackson lead the DMV Trilogy against Montrezl Harrell, Coach Dr. J, and the Chicago Triplets. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays Monday on BET. Presented by iHeart. Yay, yay, yay.